Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, a timely topic. There are a number of great plants you can grow in your garden that effectively keep mosquitoes away from you. We'll explain exactly how you have to use them to get that effect, the names of the plants, and some other things you can do to stay less bit this summer after lots of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. John, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, John. How are you, sir?
I'm great. And, staying out of the heat.
All right. And where is John staying out of the heat?
I'm in southwest Texas area, down close to Houston.
Oh, yeah, you can get some heat down there, can't you?
Just a little.
All right, what can we do for John in the Lone Star State?
I noticed the question that came up about tomatoes splitting after the rain, and I've been curious in particular if that means that the tomatoes are still absorbing nutrition even after they started to ripen. I've always heard and I've always read that once a tomato starts to ripen, it's actually separated from the mother plant. So I'm curious, is it one way or the other, or possibly a little of both?
Well, it's got to be a little bit of both. Because, as you note, a lot of times the problems with tomatoes splitting become the most evident when the tomato is either very close to ripe or dead ripe. So we know that it's still accepting water from the root system or else the skin wouldn't split. Now, what is going on when the skin of a tomato splits is its insides are growing faster than its outsides, which may mean that it is, yes, getting used to the fact that it's going to be separated from the plant, even if not physically separated from anything it needs from the plant. One thing we know, back when I was the editor of Organic Gardening magazine, I was accused of having a tomato fetish because we would have a tomato story in every issue. So we were always talking to growers and researchers. And one of the most fascinating things I learned was you don't taste a tomato only with your taste buds. You do use some of your taste buds. But most of the flavor, especially of a good big tomato, comes through your nose. It's contained in volatile aromatic oils that build up as the tomato is ripening. So if a tomato becomes dead ripe and sits on the vine, and nothing else bad happens to it, it's not attacked by slugs or evil squirrels or splits, but if it sits on the vine dead ripe, especially in Texas heat, it can lose up to 30% of its flavor in one day because those oils are aromatic and volatile. So the advice we were always told is don't be afraid to harvest a little bit early. Once a tomato gets to what the professionals call the breaker stage, and if I remember correctly, that's about halfway colored up, everyone is certain, and I've proven this thousands of times, the tomato will fully ripen up without any problems off the vine inside.
As far as the breaker stage goes, there's even a further breakdown of that. Basically, what's referred to as the first break, which is just the faint hint of color on the blossom end. And that's when I pick mine.
And you get really full flavor if they just sit on a counter
Absolutely. Inside.
Yeah. I don't think there's any downside, and there's the tremendous benefit. It's because it's during those last days that tomatoes are most vulnerable to losing flavor, and if they're attacked by something like slugs or evil squirrels, the sensation of loss we experience is so much greater than if they had just been a little green tomato.
One last thing I've got to tell you, be sure your listeners know about a fantastic website. It's my go-to resource, known as tomatoville.com.
Oh, okay. I think I've heard of that.
Tomatoville.com. There are basically the movers and shakers of the tomato world, people that you read about in seed catalogs, participate on that website. People like Dr. Carolyn Mayle, Craig
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Tom Wagner, people who are involved with responsible hybridization, coming up with new varieties, coming up with modern heirloom varieties. These are people that are there, and they do interface with the public. They're just as passionate about it as the rest of us who are members.
Oh, you threw out some good names. All right, Tomatoville. We'll all go there and have a margarita together.
A tomato margarita.
Yeah, tomato rita. All right, John. Take care, man. Stay cool this summer.
All right, thank you.
1-888-346-9499. Lisa, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am just ducky today, Lisa. How are you doing?
I think I'm ducky, too.
And where is Lisa Ducky?
I am calling from Smithfield, Virginia, the ham capital of the world.
Oh, right. Smithfield hams, huh?
Yes. Yes. We have lots of bacon.
What can we do for Lisa from the land of bacon?
Well, let me tell you, my husband and I bought this beautiful 2-acre property on the James River a few years ago, and it has 3 very large old cedar trees out front. And we also have an apple tree and a pear tree in the same general area, and a lot of ornamental trees also in that front yard area. The cedars, though, are thoroughly infested with cedar rust spores, which have caused our apple tree to defoliate. The fruit, of course, is no more. As the cedars are older trees, you know, and they've also sustained some storm damage over the years, we've been thinking about just taking them out and replacing them with some new non-cedar tree. And my question is, would it be safe to compost the old cedars on the property, or should they be completely removed from the area and disposed off-site? Because we're very concerned about infecting not only our other trees, but also our neighbors' trees also.
Do your neighbors have apple trees?
There are neighbors that are over a mile away that do have quite a few apple trees.
For people who don't know, cedar apple rust is one of the weirdest diseases in the plant world. It needs both hosts. It needs a member of the cedar family, which includes all of the junipers, you know. And it needs a member of the apple family. And what happens is the disease gets passed back and forth between those two hosts. And which tree is it that gets the impossible alien orange lanterns hanging from it?
Those are the cedars, and they're just full of them.
Yeah, it's crazy. But without the apple tree around, you know, the disease would die off.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So instead of taking out the cedars, we could take out the apple tree and probably be fine.
Well, I mean, first of all, you're saying these are massive old cedar trees, and you say they've got some storm damage, but how much of the trees are healthy, the old trees?
Well, the spores are literally all over the trees. They look like decorated Christmas trees.
Yeah, but the trees don't show any other signs of ill health, right?
No, no.
Yeah, and maybe you just tell people it's a Chinese lantern festival. They just didn't pick up. They didn't pick up their stuff at the end of the fest, you know.
Well, that would probably be a popular response because, you know, the Chinese bought Smithfield Foods not long ago. So.
Oh, there you go.
We're welcoming our new Chinese neighbors here.
That's right. Your apple tree has suffered greatly, right?
Yes.
How big a tree is that?
It's a small tree. It's not a very large tree.
And a lot of the cedars are healthy other than the spores.
Yes.
My suggestion would be to get rid of the apple tree because it's not going to cost you anything.
Right.
And take that carcass and get rid of it off site. And then give the cedar trees a season or two. And if the disease continues, which I expect it will not, then you can start getting prices on taking them down.
Is there any additional treatment that we need to do to the cedars after we've removed the apple tree and taken that off site?
Remove the apple tree, take it off site, then have a real certified arborist come out and look at the cedar trees and give you 2 prices. One to go up and clean out all the dead wood at the end of winter. You don't want to be cutting them in the fall.
Right.
But at the end of winter or in early spring to take out the dead wood, and then what it would cost to actually have the trees cut down.
Right.
Having a big mature tree cut down costs thousands of dollars. You know that, right?
Yes. I really didn't want to do that if we didn't have to because I love trees.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems to make common sense. We had a guy on the show talking about shade gardening, and he took a different tack than I ever thought. It was with climate change, with global warming, we need more shade. We need more big trees. We need more of these areas of coolness to kind of help us out. And I just love the cedars.
Well, I do too. And so I'm very relieved. I just didn't want to be causing problems for my neighbors because this is largely a rural farm area.
That won't affect. No, no. It's only apples to cedars and junipers. No other plants are involved.
Okay, perfect. That is a great solution, and that's great news. I really appreciate it.
All right. Good luck, Lisa.
Yeah, I'll call you back and let you know next spring what happens.
Please do. Please do.
Okay. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce my fall tour dates. I'll appear at the Delaware Home Show in Newark on Saturday, September 10th, at the Spring City Library on Friday evening, September 30th, and at my version of Vegas, the Fredericksburg, Virginia Home and Garden Show on October 15th and 16th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with plants that prevent bites and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating 140 years of introducing unique new varieties and providing treasured heirlooms, hardworking hybrids, live plants, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. More at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, a timely topic. Yes, there are plants that repel mosquitoes, but not the way you're thinking. Luckily, however, they really work and they're very easy to grow. We'll tell you all about them when we get to the question of the week. In the meantime, lots of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Ron, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
I am just ducky today, Ron. How are you, sir?
I am great. A little warm and tired, but other than that,
okay,
we're doing all right.
Where is Ron warm and tired?
I'm actually in Rincon, Georgia.
Okay.
A little town about 25 miles north of Savannah, northwest of Savannah.
And what can we do for Ron in the peach tree state?
Well, actually, I think it's becoming Ron in the blueberry state. We are kicking butt in blueberries in the nation. And I have a little over an acre, and I've got a patch on it now that's about 60 feet long of rabbit eyes.
Let me just stop you there, because I think that a lot of our northern listeners don't realize how many different types of blueberries there are. And most of the time, you wouldn't be able to distinguish them one from the other. But when you start way up north, the blueberries grow as natural ground cover. And the berries are very small and sweet. As you get down to Pennsylvania, you get more to the high bush blueberries, which have been bred from those little guys, and they're upright shrubs, and they bear lots of good-sized fruit. But as you go down south, you don't have the chilling hours that these northern fruits might normally require. So the rabbit eye type were bred to get by in climates with milder winters.
That is correct. Down here in this area, there used to be about 800 chilling hours a year, and then that's kind of, they said, with climate change, that's probably down probably 50 or 100 hours. So we're probably still at 700, 750.
Good,
and good. The rabbit eyes are really good for that. This is my research on this. The rabbit eyes are really good for that. There are some other cultivars that they're working on, and now they've introduced the southern high bush. Those come in earlier, and that's kind of the commercial crop. And that's kind of where I'm headed, is where my daughter and I are looking at planting the entire acre in blueberries.
Well, you know, that can bite you sometimes, you know, having a monoculture like that. Even if you're only interested in growing blueberries, I would always advise you to break up the stretches of blueberries with something maybe you guys just want for yourself, like a nice big patch of sweet corn or a little field of pumpkins or something different, just in case a pest or a disease finds your farm. If it's blueberries next to blueberries next to blueberries out for thousands of feet, there's nothing to stop them. Whereby a lot of these things, if they hit a little field of sweet corn, they're going to stop at the edge there, and the blueberries on the other side will be at least temporarily safe.
Noticed on my berries, I let them get a little bit out of hand.
Right.
They're overcropped this year. And probably this patch will probably produce about 40 or 50 gallons.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just wondering, I'm supposed to do a post-harvest pruning?
No.
And how?
I never like pruning in the fall. I mean, blueberries are kind of a summertime thing. It's not like they're a spring-flowering plant. No, I would always wait until after the winter is over. Because even though theoretically you don't get much of a winter, the last thing you want to do is prune your plants, have them start growing, and then have a real cold night set in. No, what you want to do is clean the orchard floor, get rid of any mummies, any dead fruit, anything like that. But I would always prune them in the spring, because then you can see where the winter damage was.
Right. Like I said, I left them a little bit unkempt, so they've grown up under it. Should I go ahead and cut some of that down?
You can try. It is the weeds and birds are the worst banes of blueberry growers. It's actually very difficult to control the weeds underneath blueberries. Really, what you want to do is have lanes wide enough that you can mow, so you can keep that down. And then, you know, it's hand cultivation with very specialized hoes and gentle weed whacking. If you and a partner can get the rhythm down, the partner can use like a half a piece of PVC pipe held up against the plant to protect it. And you can you can knock down a lot of the weeds. But it's never anything where you're going to be totally in control of it. Your best bet is every once in a while go out and get a ton of milled peat moss and put that down as a mulch and cover that with compost. That should be the only feeding you need and to keep your soil acidic.
Right. Yeah, my acidity level, I'm at 4.9 right
now. Oh, excellent, baby doll. You're doing good.
Yeah, I know. It's a beautiful place for it. It was all pine barrens and it was lowlands.
Oh,
so
excellent.
The soil is like black, sandy soil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do have the ag agent coming out on Friday to help look at this.
Don't let them talk you into using chemical fertilizers or heavy sprays. You always get a premium price if you can put up that they were organically grown, or if you don't want to pay for certification, just put up no spray.
Okay. All right. Sounds good, Mike. I appreciate it. I love your show.
All right. Good luck, Ron.
All right. Thanks.
1-888-346-9499. Ken, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How are you today?
I am just ducky, Ken. How are you doing, sir?
I'm a little frustrated, Mike. I'll tell you, I put in a couple fruit trees in my backyard in hopes that years down the road I'd actually be able to, you know, bear some fruit and, you know, be able to eat it. And it's more satisfying when you grow food yourself. I have a peach tree, nectarine tree, and a cherry tree. And lately I got peaches on my peach tree, which just looked terrific. I was so happy I finally got peaches on it. And I only come to find that the squirrels are going after my peaches to the tune of all of my peaches. Literally, there's not a peach left on this tree, and I'm really upset about it. And now they're starting to work on the nectarines, and I'm wondering what I can do to prevent them.
Well, Ken, first of all, where are you in your trees?
I'm in Media, Pennsylvania, right by Rose Tree Park.
Okay. And I want you to use the correct scientific term for your enemies. They're not squirrels, Ken. They're evil squirrels. Don't forget to call them by their full name.
Okay, I will. And they certainly are. I've called them tree rats before, but I'm really frustrated. One day I walked up, there was actually three of them in the tree. And this tree is 15 feet tall. I mean, it is just putting on some size right now. I wrapped the green fencing around it so the deer couldn't get to it. And I thought I was in the clear, and only come to find that the squirrels go under that netting up into the tree.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Can squirrels not fling themselves from tree to tree?
I have these far enough apart that they've got to come from the ground and go up.
We got you. Well, first of all, do you have standard size trees?
Well, I bought them as dwarfs, but they're not dwarfs. I can tell you that the way they're putting on size, they're not going to be 10-foot trees.
Yeah, because it's going to start to be difficult for you to handle them. Now, have you been pruning them?
I did. I think maybe first or second year I put them into a default. I think I cut them back a little bit, and then I kind of stayed away.
No, you got to prune them. And one of the things you can do when you're pruning them is to keep lowering the height. Take the tallest branches off. That won't hurt the tree. It'll make it go out like an umbrella, make it a little bit easier for you to get at it. But if the tree rats have to go up into the canopy along the tree, you get rid of that deer barrier, which you don't need anymore, and wrap sticky stuff all up and down the trunk of the tree.
Is that right?
You can buy a substance, I think it's called Tanglefoot, that you can actually paint on it. It's like a gluish substance, and, you know, that'll also capture peach tree borers and other insects. But just think of anything that a squirrel would not want to crawl across, and, you know, you can paint the trees with that. You know, as long as you just keep it in the middle of the trunk and do a couple of feet, you won't hurt the tree at all. I was going to suggest you could also aim motion-activated sprinklers at the trees.
Right. Now, I did look into that. I looked online, and there was a product called Surround WP, and it was kind of like a white powdery substance.
Okay, that's a different thing. The nice thing about the motion-activated sprinklers is you can move them around, aim them at different plants, you know, wherever you're getting attacked. But, yes, your peaches and nectarines should be sprayed with Surround, the micronized clay spray, several times a season, just to protect them from insects and disease. But
right. Now, how does that affect me? I'm always leery of putting chemicals on my food.
Well, you wouldn't be putting – this is what you use instead of chemicals. It's clay.
Okay.
It just puts a thin film of earth around the fruits and the leaves, and it doesn't interfere with photosynthesis, but it keeps disease and pests at bay. You have the opportunity to put sticky stuff on the trunk. There's also a hot pepper wax you can spray up into the trees on the fruits. Squirrels don't like that, and you can wash it off yourself. The motion-activated sprinkler. But it's a never-ending battle, man.
Okay, I really appreciate your time, Mike. Thank you so much.
All right, good luck, sir.
All right, thank you.
1-888-346-9499. Colin, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thanks to talk to you.
Ah, it's nice to talk to you, Colin. Where are you, man?
Kingston, Ontario, up in the Great White North.
What can we do for Colin up in Ontario?
Well, I got a sugar bush maple. It's a tree that we planted bare root in May. And it was looking like it was growing fine. We put it about in a 2-foot hole. It started blooming about a few weeks after that, getting some tree leaves coming up. But then suddenly the tree leaves became very brown and very dry and just died on us. Now, I did have wood mulch on it, but I started listening to your show and took the wood mulch off, but it doesn't seem to have solved the problem, unfortunately. So I'm just trying to figure out where I went wrong or what we can do, if anything, to revive the tree.
So you got it bare root. There were no wrappings to remove.
That's right.
And you say you put it in a 2-foot hole. What does that mean? Can you see the root flare above ground?
No.
So you planted it like a lollipop?
I guess so, yeah.
Yes. So you planted it too deep. Did you put anything in the planting hole other than the soil you removed?
No, I don't believe so. I think it was a very clayey soil.
Mm-hmm.
We filled it back up.
Right.
And now the friend I was with who brought the tree said we had to really clear out of air bubbles and stuff, so we watered the heck out of it and sort of mashed that down. Like I said, it did work for a bit, but yeah,
okay, so
because I put it in too low.
Yeah, well, you did put it in too low, and you said you did pile wood mulch. Was that touching the bark?
It was.
Yeah. See, what happens is, as you see in nature, all the trees have this beautiful muscle coming up out of the ground where you see the root flare, and above the root flare, the bark, that's a very precarious part of the tree. If that bark is covered over, the tree can't breathe properly. Insects can get at it without being seen. Mice can nibble away at it without being seen. And being constantly moist will rot the bark right through. And this could affect a young tree very quickly. Now, you say when you planted it, you then heavily watered it. Exactly what did you do?
We've chipped the hose to it, really soaked that hole, all the mud, the clay, it was very muddy.
Right.
And then it was cool enough for a little while in May, but we did start to water it more as the weather got hot. I tried leaving on the drip.
Okay, so you gave it a real good watering the first day. For how long?
I wouldn't say a very long time. We just soaked the crap out of it and then left.
And then you didn't water it again for another month?
No. We did in about a week and then another week. Yeah.
Yeah. I think probably it died from lack of attention. What you should have done when you planted it the first time, you drag a hose over, you let it drip at the base for like 24 hours, but just like a drip in a faucet that you can't fix. Then you can turn it off for a while. If it doesn't rain in the next couple days, you do that again. And then that first year in the ground, you really make sure it gets a good deep soaking a couple of times a week anytime you don't get rain. Now, once the tree is mature, once it's gotten through a couple of seasons, you should never have to water it again. But the biggest cause of premature, very young tree death is inadequate watering in the first week.
Interesting. Now, we did have quite a bit of rain, and I thought that, okay, that provided the water we needed.
Okay, well...
But do you think the mulch was, and because it's a clay soil, do you think it maybe wasn't getting deep enough?
Well, how thick was the mulch?
About 2 inches.
2 inches is the demarcation point. After 2 inches, it can prevent rain from getting to the roots of the plant.
Yeah.
So now it just looks dead. There's no living leaves on it or anything?
No, they're all dry. We crumbled them off.
And no new growth or anything like that?
No.
Do you have a warranty on it or anything?
We can call the shop. They're pretty good. It's a nonprofit.
What I would do is I would first dig it up and check to see if the bark is rotten underground. That would be a big sign if the roots are rotten. But call the place and see if they'll make a replacement. But don't plant it now, because even up there, you're going to get a fairly hot summer, right?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So wait until September, and that's when the replacement plant should go in the ground. So I want you to plant it high. I want you to do that drip watering thing, no mulch. And just to double check, when we get to the time, go to our website. Go to youbetyourgarden.org. Go to Garden Answers A to Z, and then click under T for tree planting. People think it's instinctive and intuitive to plant a tree, but actually most of the things that make for a long-lasting tree are the reverse of what people instinctively do.
Gotcha.
And don't feel bad, because you only become a good gardener by killing a large number of plants early on.
Oh, man, I've been doing good then.
Well, all right, Colin. Mike. Good luck, sir.
Yes, I appreciate it. Take care, Mike.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody to always water in the early morning when all parts of the plant are receptive to moisture. Not in the heat of the day when plants are closed up tight to retain their existing moisture. Or in the evening, when they're sitting wet overnight, can breed dread diseases. But don't go looking for all the details under W for wise watering in the A to Z Answers section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with plants that keep your blood where it belongs and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating 140 years of introducing unique new varieties and providing treasured heirlooms, hardworking hybrids, live plants, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. More at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a couple of minutes, we will get to the question of the week. Plants that actually really do repel blood-sucking mosquitoes. You won't want to miss this valuable and timely gardening information. And you won't. It's coming up right after a couple more of your fabulous phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Paula, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Paula.
Nice to talk to you.
It's nice to talk to you. Where are you, Paula?
I'm in Newtown Square, Pennsylvania.
I know exactly where that is. I have relatives out there. There's no good way between me and them.
Yeah, it's gotten pretty crowded these days, but where we are, it's still not too busy.
What can we do for Paula in Newtown Square?
Well, I have rosemary plants that are causing a problem.
Okay.
I've had rosemary plants for years. I had one for about 20 years as a topiary, and I transplanted it, and it died. So that was one problem. The other problem is I have about four now, which are about 4 years old, well, maybe three, and then a couple which are about a year and a half old. Now, the older ones started getting stippled leaves, and I looked under the leaves, and they're little gray insects. When I shake the branches, these are small plants. I keep them pruned because I bring them in at the end of each summer and put them out early in the spring. So when you shake the plants, a lot of these little bugs fly around, almost like white fly, but it's not white fly.
Okay.
They're long and slender. They're very small, but
okay,
they're gray, grayish black.
Okay.
I've tried insecticidal soap with pyrethrins, and it doesn't seem to do anything.
Okay.
What can I do?
All right. Now, are the plants in pots?
Yes, they are.
What kind of pots?
They're all in glazed ceramic.
And there's good drainage holes in the bottom.
Yes, there are.
Excellent.
They're not in full sun. They get partial sun because we have almost all shade in our property.
Okay, so they don't get a lot of sun. You know, rosemary is a full sun plant, though.
Yes. Yeah, they get sun, but not for 8 hours a day.
Okay.
Or even maybe six. They get some dappled sun for a good part of it.
Okay. Now, do you feed them?
Yes, I do. I feed them regularly. I either use Miracle-Gro or else I make a tea out of horse poop.
Oh, okay. Neither one is a good fertilizer for these plants. I can tell you yes. These are Mediterranean plants. You know that. They exist naturally in the same climate as olives, grapevines, and fig trees. And like all of those plants, they thrive on poor soil, good drainage, and little to no extra nutrition. The Miracle-Gro is just chemical salts, and especially in ceramic, it's going to build up in the soil inside that container, and essentially it becomes the same as trying to grow too close to the ocean.
Huh.
You make the soil salty. And horse manure has nothing to do with rosemary. I would rather you feed rosemary nothing, which is what I always fed mine. These are what I consider, in a good way, trash plants, like raspberries.
Uh-huh.
They get by great with no nutrition. Stop feeding them. Try to flush the salts out of the water. Maybe when you bring them in again this winter, because they're not winter hardy, you move them in and out of the house, maybe you repot them into some nice fresh potting soil that doesn't have any chemical fertilizers or water-holding crystals in it. And then what I want you to do for the bugs, every morning for the next 5 mornings, I want you to go out first thing in the morning. I want you to cradle the plant in one hand. In the other hand, have a hose with a nozzle that you can set to a laser-sharp beam of water and blast all the bugs out of the plant. Just be relentless. Do each plant in a row and do it again and again and again every morning. Only in the morning, not at night. You don't want the plants to sit wet overnight. But do it every morning and do it for 2 mornings after you don't see any bugs anymore.
All right.
Water is the best pesticide.
Fabulous. I like that. Great. Thank you so very much. I appreciate your help.
All right. Good luck, Paula.
Thank you. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Ken, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing today?
I am just ducky, Ken. Thank you for asking. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
And Ken is doing fine where?
Roscommon, Michigan. It's about 100 miles south of the Mackinac Bridge.
Okay, very good. What can we do for Ken up in Michigan?
Rose chafer beetles.
Okay.
They have pestered me for the last 2 years, and I find all kinds of chemical things to take care of them, but I don't want to do that because I have a lot of wildlife that frequents my backyard.
Very good.
And so I'd rather do it organically if I can.
Sure. And these are members of the scarab beetle family. Same family as Japanese beetles, but they look a little different, right?
Yes.
Okay, so your roses, are they fed?
They're not attacking. I don't have any roses.
Oh.
They're attacking everything else in the yard except the hostas and the astilbe.
Okay. That's bizarre.
Well, all they do is fly on and land on anything that's available and make baby bugs all day long and eat my plants.
That's the scarab beetle family, and they leave behind that distinctive lacy kind of destruction on the leaves.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Your landscape is not fed?
Oh, yeah. My landscape is fed. You know, I have mulch all in the yard. I have sphagnum moss that I put around the plants and things like that, you know, to feed the lawn.
But you're not using any strict plant food. You're just using mulches.
No. Yes.
Okay. Well, why are you using moss?
Well, sphagnum moss, it's a really airy kind of, I was told that it would help hold the water and it wouldn't dissipate.
Okay. And what kind of mulch?
It's a combination of topsoil and we have a thing up in Michigan called, it's cow manure. And it's mixed in with the mulch.
Okay. It's mixed in with topsoil.
With the topsoil and vermiculite.
Oh, okay. So it's more like a potting soil almost. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, that shouldn't do anything to attract these beetles. Have you put out traps?
No, I haven't put any traps out. I should have called you about 3 weeks ago when they were heavy duty. They've just about completely gone now.
Oh, okay. Well, that's very interesting. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. So you don't have a lot of adults to deal with right now, which means their eggs are hatching down in the soil below the plants that they were eating.
Yes.
So there's two things you can do. If you want to get a good knockdown right away, you can buy what are called beneficial nematodes and water them into the soil. You buy these mail order because you have to get them fresh. Beneficial nematodes, N-E-M-A-T-O-D-E-S. They are tiny microscopic worm-like creatures, and they'll arrive like sealed in a tinfoil package that has a little sponge inside. And when you're ready to use them, which would be in the early evening, just as the sun goes down, you would really soak your garden well. Then you would drop the sponge into a watering can, and somewhere around 50 million of these microscopic predators would be released into the water. And then you just water them around the areas underneath where you had the worst infestations. Overnight, they will burrow into the wet soil, and they will then attack the eggs and the larvae of the beetles that ate your plants. But I think you also definitely want to apply milky spore in the fall. When we get to, let's see, you're up in Michigan, so I'm going to say mid-August.
Okay.
Go to a garden center. They know what milky spore disease is. They sell it in bags, and it's a naturally occurring soil organism. It's the reason Japanese beetles are not out of control in Japan. It occurs naturally in their soils, and it inhibits their development. So what you're going to do is right at the end of summer, you're going to apply this milky spore powder to your entire landscape, and it will go down into the soil, and the beetle grubs, which at that point will be at some of their largest size. They will have been feeding on the roots of plants all summer long. All they have to do is ingest a single spore in warm soil. And it's got to be warm soil, so you don't want to wait up there. You want to do this in mid-August. All they have to do is ingest a single spore. They die, and then their body turns into a milky spore factory. This stuff does not harm any other creatures other than the grubs of Japanese beetles, rose chafer beetles, June beetles, all those destructive scarab beetles.
Okay.
So that way you knock out next year's generation in advance.
Okay. And the nematodes I put down now.
The nematodes, if you want to do that, that would do a good knockdown, and then the milky spore would take care of whoever's left. If you were only going to do one, I would say do the milky spore, because that has the ability to protect your soil for decades to come if there's enough grubs in it.
Okay.
All right, so good luck. You do this right, you won't have any beetle problems next year, Ken.
I hope not.
All right, good luck, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mike.
Okay, take care, man. All right, as promised, it's time for a very timely question of the week. How do you use plants and more to to repel mosquitoes. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, get us started with this week's all-too-important question.
Sure, Mike. Betty in Oriental, North Carolina writes, Mike mentioned a number of plants that can repel mosquitoes several months ago, but my memory has failed me. Could you please go over the names again? Several of us down here are waiting to hear from you. We're on the water and have lots of mosquitoes. We completely enjoy and learn from You Bet Your Garden.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet they have a bumper crop of skeeters down there. We often vacation at a great little beach community just a little north of where they are, at the very southern tip of the Virginia shore. And some years, the number of mosquitoes that are hanging out up in the eaves of our house seems impossibly huge. But we always have a good supply of one of the plants she's asking us about. Trash bags filled with lemon balm that I harvested from the garden right before we went down.
But we have to be really clear here. None of the plants we're going to name can keep mosquitoes away growing in the garden or in a container. They contain great natural mosquito repellents that you have to apply personally.
Right. Mosquito-repelling plants only work if you strip off the leaves, crush them up, and rub them on your exposed skin. But they work very well when you do crush and rub them. The best ones are just as effective as the chemical repellent DEET or the top store-bought repellents whose active ingredients are based on plants. And those homegrown plants are right at hand when the sun goes down and you're working in the garden.
You rely mostly on lemon balm, that's B-A-L-M, because it's easy to grow, which is a synonym for invasive. You've somehow been able to keep yours under control in actual raised beds, but less experienced gardeners will want to grow it in big containers because it can quickly take over.
Right. It's much the same as mint. It's real easy to grow a lot of it, whether that's what you intended to do or not. I'm willing to do the work to contain mine because it grows lots of big leaves really quickly. And every member of my family has had great success using lemon balm. But in scientific studies, the absolute best lemon-scented garden plant for this purpose is lemon thyme. It's been shown to be highly effective when the crushed leaves are rubbed on your skin.
But lemon thyme is a smallish plant with fairly tiny leaves. You'd have to grow a lot of plants to be able to harvest enough to use on a regular basis.
No downside there. Lemon thyme is a very attractive plant with a trailing habit that makes it perfect for hanging baskets or growing over the top of large containers like half whiskey barrels. You know, catnip may be even better. It's scored very high in studies using actual biting mosquitoes. Just don't blame me if you wind up with a garden full of intoxicated cats.
We should mention here that even though there don't seem to be reports of reactions to these plants, you should always test a little bit of any plant on, say, a part of one forearm before you rub it all over yourself.
And even though some of the most effective plants are lemon-scented, don't dare try to do this with actual lemons or limes. They are known to cause serious skin reactions. Now, you know what? Let's review some of the other things you can do to ease mosquito problems. Like having a strong fan blowing on you sideways when you're sitting outside. Mosquitoes are poor flyers and they can't fight a good breeze.
Empty standing water on your property. Make sure your gutters are free of debris and place BTI dunks or granules in containers of water you've deliberately placed around your home. Female mosquitoes will use the water as a breeding site, but the BTI, an all-natural soil organism, will prevent the eggs from turning into adult mosquitoes.
And before any of you out there can ask again for the 4,000th time, BTI is safe for frogs, toads, birds, bees, people, and pets. It only affects mosquitoes, black flies, and gnats. Now, you should also enlist natural enemies to prey on the blood-sucking pests. Birds like swallows and martins eat enormous numbers of mosquitoes, so provide freshwater sources for them in the summer and nesting boxes or birdhouses that are geared to their specific species.
And don't forget my favorite, dragonflies. These mosquito hawks might be the best predators of adult mosquitoes, and you always see lots of them near the water.
Because as Willie Sutton famously said, that's where the money is. We'll link up to a previous question of the week on how to attract and keep these great mosquito eaters around.
That just leaves store-bought repellents.
Specifically ones whose active ingredients have been shown to be just as effective as some concentrations of the chemical repellent DEET. Oil of lemon eucalyptus, which is distilled from the leaves of a species of eucalyptus tree native to Australia. Picaridin, a synthetic version of a substance found naturally in the black pepper plant. And lemon-scented geranium, which is the active ingredient in the repellents Bite Blocker and Sting Free. Well, that sure was lots of interesting information about mosquito bite prevention, now wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, with links to lots more articles about this torrid topic, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to call time on me if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired report, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org.
Please include your location. Oh, please, please, please. Location. Please.
And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where nobody cares about where you are, but where you will find the answers to all of those questions you were going to email us without your location attached, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Lunas, executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Rich Banowitz and Sarah the She-Devil Kazar are our lemony fresh internet illuminati. Nobody dares bite our intrepid intern, Emma Bixler. Always keep Alexis Landis, who produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia, nearby at sunset because she is the mosquito magnet. Biting Al Banks is our editor. I'm Mike McGrath. I'm so mean, I bite mosquitoes back. I make poison sick. Weeds pull themselves out of the garden and run away when they see me coming. And so I'll see you again here next week. The final stages before reaching full ripeness are often a treacherous time for tomatoes. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss how to protect and when to pick these fabulous fruits of summer. Plus answers to all your growing questions.